Okay, we're here with Willow, and welcome, Willow, to Lake County Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good. I've got a list of questions that you've given me, so I'll start with that, and we'll go from there. And the first one says, I should introduce you, though, as, is it fair to say you are a witch? Is that fair to say that? How should we start?
Yes and no. I wouldn't call myself a witch per se. Others do call us witches. I would call myself a priestess of the old religion.
Okay, priestess of the old religion. And what is that, the old religion, exactly?
The craft of the wise was the religion that existed among Europeans before the Romans came along and imposed first their empire and then their religion.
First their empire and then their religion, which was what, Christianity or their...
A Romanized version of Christianity. I'm not sure what direct relationship that bore to the mission of people in the Middle East, but there was a Romanized version that was imposed in Europe.
So the old religion then went underground, is that fair to say?
Well, it was that or die. The church did have the Inquisition going there for a couple of centuries and were rapidly doing in any of the competition they could locate. So most of the family treads and other priests and priestesses of the old religion just went underground wherever they were. One of the reasons that there is now a great variety in different traditions of witchcraft is that a number of places in the British Isles, particularly, and in other parts of Europe, in France, and all through Europe, there were different kinds of traditions, and they just simply got secret and went underground rather than be killed where they were and preserved their own information and handed it down secretly from generation to generation. Then in 1951, when they stopped making it illegal in England to be witches, there were a number of people that started publishing books and kind of coming out of the broom closet, and now there are all kinds of books, all kinds of public pagans and magazines and publications, and it's a lot more socially acceptable. Certainly in California, it's just one of many varieties of religion.
So but the fair title to give it is the old religion?
That's what we call it because it was a religion before others were imported and imposed upon us. And this revival is also called pagan, neo-pagan, all those kinds of things. Basically, we are an earth-centered religion and believe in the holiness of the life force as it is expressed on earth and through the cosmos.
The holiness of the life?
Life force.
Okay, that's a good introduction, I guess. We'll get back to that as we explore. I guess we could start with Halloween. That you said earlier that you have 8 major holidays during the year that
yes.
You celebrate?
Yes. Originally, the people of England and Wales and Scotland had holidays that were connected with the seasonal things that they did in their societies. They herded cows, they planted, they cut, you know, blah, blah, blah. Samhain was the time when they brought the cows down from the summer pastures, and they, in the Druid countries, they would pass them between the fires and purify them with the smoke, and generally this was the new year turning that began the winter season. The belief was that at this time of the year, the veil between the worlds, whether you're thinking of between living and dead, between Middle Earth and the realms of Faerie, those veils thin at this time of year, called Samhain in the old ways. And then it goes on through the year with Yule being the midwinter holiday, and then Bridget in the spring, in like early February, about the 2nd of February, this was the rekindling of the Sunfire, and then there's the spring equinox, and then May Day, the Beltane celebration with maypoles and May baskets and flowers and celebrations of fertility, and then summer solstice, and then Lammas or Loafmas, the beginning of the harvest in the 1st of August, and then the continuation with the fall equinox. Then by Samhain, the harvest is over, we stop eating vegetables, it's cold, then we begin the season of the hunt. And the lords of the forest are the god symbols that we use. The connection with Halloween was that when the Roman Church tried to persuade the people to their particular way of doing things and get the people to come out of the woods and come into the big old churches and pay the money that way. They couldn't quite get the religion out of the people, so they co-opted it, which had been, of course, the practice of the Roman Empire in their time. So Halloween then became All Souls Day the next day, and so the idea was that there was this All Hallows Eve, which before the honoring, I think, of All Saints or something, the idea was that all the bad guys had a good time and went out and the bad spirits. But it harkens back again to the people's recognition of the need to honor their dead, and that's part of the current celebrations that we use, that we do this honoring of our ancestors and our cultural dead because of this being the season when the vegetation is dying and we're more aware of death and the veils are thinning.
Let's talk about, you said you prefer to be called a high priestess, but which is more the, now which can be a man or a woman, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Witch is generally a member of the religion of Wicca.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you.
There are other kinds of pagans, like druids and you know, all kinds of varieties of magicians and people that practice varieties of earth religions. I mean, the Native Americans have an earth religion that's very similar to the kind of earth religion that existed in Europe before the Romanization.
And so the practice of, what did you say the actual, if you're a witch, you're in what, which Shea?
Wicca.
Wicca, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is witchcraft exactly, or is that...
That's like another way of saying it. There are many ways of working magic. The craft involved in our religion is the magic part, because it has a particular personality about the magical practice that we have. It is our witchcraft. Our religion is the worship of our gods, our goddess, the Mother Earth, and our gods that have symbols of, like, the animals, the vegetation, the sun. And this dance of life is the center of our religion and our practices. What our particular branch of paganism is this old handed-down religion of Wicca that was in Europe. Our little circle's variety came from the northern part of England. There are other well-known English-derived witchcraft traditions, like Gerald Gardner, for example, founded the Gardnerian tradition, but that came out of Sussex and the southern, you know, that part of England. There are other, as I say, craft books being written by people that had information from little geographical areas, and these secrets are being kind of shared back and forth and practices and stuff. So there's been this whole re-burgeoning of the craft.
And in practicing that craft, what do you do? What do witches really do?
As I mentioned, we have 8 high days. Those holidays, we get together often with other circles, and we have certain things that we celebrate in connection with the kind of season it is. As I say, for this one, we have celebrations of the dead. For Yule, we celebrate the rebirth of life and light in the winter solstice. And these celebrations usually begin with the cleansing and banishing of negative influences. We usually carefully take ritual baths and burn sage and generally clear our energies before we feel ready to properly worship. We work in what we refer to as the unbuilt temple. We don't make big churches out of rocks and stones. We cast magical circles with energy. We focus our energy to make the circle. And then within that circle, we invite the representatives of the elements and the Lord and Lady, our God and our Goddess, to participate, and we do the appropriate celebratory things on these high days. Now, we also have meetings at full moons. These are usually our working meetings. This is when we do specific magical workings, when we do healings for people. Right now, a lot of us do works to help the environment because, of course, the Earth is our mother goddess and we don't want her destroyed. So we do these kinds of things according to need. There are many ways that we work magic. Most of our kind of magic isn't the kind that involves all kinds of special materials, special robes, special times of day. We're real down-home kind of magical folks. We will pick up, you know, sticks, birds, rocks, you know, feathers, rocks, make a little charm, charge it with our energies.
Special kind of spirit.
Yeah, yeah. And we use a lot of that kind of thing for different kinds of works and stuff to help with things.
We're here with Willow. She's from Lake County, and she's a priestess in the Wiccan old pagan religion. I guess that gives you all the terms in one there, right?
Yeah, it's an old pagan religion, and it is Wicca.
Wicca.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's get back to let's go back a little bit to a couple of things you mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how the pagan religions had to go underground in Europe at a certain point. And
it coincided with the invention of the printing press and movable type, because there were a couple of German monks that came out with this nifty book on how to find witches. And it got published, and that became the manual for how to do it and how to torture them to extract the confessions and what you were supposed to get them to confess.
And
so they started this 2 centuries rampage of, you know, murder and torture. And
what was the main fear of the certain Christians against the pagan religions?
Then it was simple political and economical competition. Now it is centuries of essentially bad press. You know, they won. We went underground and many, many thousands of us died. Some say as many as 9 million, but, you know, it's hard to know. There were major purges all over Europe. Then they started into this whole thing about how they were killed because they were evil, awful, and all the problems of the world, the plague, you know, barrenness, you name it, it was all because they were witches in the area. There were certain political maneuverings throughout Europe in those centuries, and they were fond of blaming it on witchcraft. There were people that liked practicing kinds of magic that were designed to be evil, that had really nothing to do with witchcraft, but it got lumped into the same bag. In the court of Louis XIV, for example, there were some courtiers that got into doing black masses with defrocked priests and, you know, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. And then, of course, by later centuries, this was all lumped into this big glob of black evilness called witchcraft and Satanism, and see how bad they were and how evil. So the simple country folks that were, you know, doing herbs and being midwives and blacksmiths and just folks and practicing their old religions got caught up and smeared with this brush that was carefully constructed by people who, as I say, had a program, a basic PR program, to put the old religions into this place of being evil and devil worshippers and the ones that were responsible for all the ills in society. There are fanatics running around today that believe that whether it's, you know, burning abortion clinics or burning witches, it's the same kind of thing, and so let's all, you know, get out there and, you know, propagandize and do what we can to suppress the spread and resurgence of paganism and earth-centered religions. We basically don't believe in pie in the sky by and by. We believe that you reap what you sow, life to life. We do believe in reincarnation, and I think that those that would prefer to say that you've only got one life and you've got to do it now or it's going to be all over with, would prefer that this kind of information didn't get out?
Back on the prior thing, why does the devil have horns? Satan is a Christian deity, he's a sub-deity, he's an angel, fallen angel. Why does he have horns? Ah, well, there were lots of pagan woods deities that had horns.
The old shamans wore animal skins, deer skins, and had the horns and incarnated the god of the hunt.
This is when Satan picked up horns, because that was part of the church's conceptualizing Satan as
the god of
pagan deities. He's not a pagan deity, he's a Christian deity.
Right.
We're not Satan worshippers. Right. That's somebody else.
Now, our most famous purge, or at least, most mm-hmm. famous, most well-known, was, of course, in Salem there. And anyone, I think, having read Arthur Miller's play recently, The Crucible, I noticed that any sort of homage to nature was considered very dangerous. It was that clear cut.
Oh, yeah. The Puritans were very much in the headspace that if it's of the world, it's of the flesh of the devil. If it has to do with the here and now, this earthly plane, then it's all bad, rotten, and terrible. And you have to try to be ascetic and suppress everything that's natural and human about you and work toward this grand scheme of maybe getting into the grace of God and being saved. If you look at some of the classical sermons, I remember reading Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God in a college literature class and saying, and this man was preaching to an audience that included women and children, and he's putting out these horrible images. I mean, this is obscene. And of course, the whole culture had this paranoid overlay. I mean, if you read Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, et cetera, et cetera, I don't know about the Hollywood version, but in the original, she was like a social rebel, and that, of course, was always part of the problem with the witch. She wouldn't conform to the purposes of empire anywhere, anytime. And in Salem, you had an interesting combination of that kind of an atmosphere with a bunch of, like, pre-pubescent little girls, and that kind of energy frequently in pre-adolescence creates poltergeist action, things falling off the walls and this, that, and the other thing, because they have this tremendous amount of psychic energy that's just gone every which way. And in that kind of a culture, it wasn't okay to be a horny adolescent. It wasn't okay to be a natural human person, no matter who you were. And it's always been rougher for adolescents than anybody else to subscribe to Hippocratical methods. And hypocritical, excuse me, everybody medical, I meant.
That's right. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, that's another story. But anyway, so here were all these kids. And they apparently had this nice Jamaican or whoever she was that told them some nifty stories about some of the background she had known. And like kids everywhere, they took it from there and ran with it. I think that some of the so-called Satanists and bugaboos out there today have to do with the same kind of phenomenon, where kids pick up a few things from some old Hollywood movies and maybe some, you know, books about Charlie Manson or something, and go figure that they're big bad Satanists, witchy poo wahoozles, and they go out and do bad things to people and kill and murder in the name of scaring people, and it's the same kind of phenomenon.
So let's take apart some of the other stereotypes then.
Okay.
Like night meetings and the full moon and brooms and all that kind of stuff, because those are things that
All stereotypes, they have some reality. We are a nature religion, and yes, we do keep track of the cycles of the moon, and yes, we have a moon goddess, and she says, you know, once in a month, and better it be when the moon is full, there shall ye assemble in some secret place and adore the spirit of me, who am queen of all witches. And so we do. And We do. Our particular little happy group stays up all night to keep vigil at the eight high days because my visions from the goddess said it's important that we stay in touch with the tides of life, with the movement of light and dark and the movement of the dance of the orbs in the system in which we live. We are a part of that dance, and to keep ourselves in tune with it, we watch the sun down and then we keep vigil all night and watch the sun up eight times a year so that we see where it sets and where it rises and keep track of that. We do align ourselves with the phases of the moon, as I say, and all those things. Broomsticks are useful tools in the old days when it could be a capital offense to own a craft tool. You wouldn't likely have your stang sitting there or your big staff or wand, but, hey, tie some twigs on it and, hey, there's a broom, man, you know. And some of the old rules and things said, like, if you make some of your tools out of wax, you know, the idea is that you put psychic energy into this tool, and that's part of what makes it effective. And you had to make your tools look like they were just things you'd have lying around your house.
In some traditions, the broom is still used. In some traditions, the broom is still used as a cleansing tool.
It's also used in other rituals. For example, in some hand fastings, people jump the broom. The bride and groom jump over the broom, and you know, it's used to sweep away evil influences from in front of them. And it's one of the things we use. We use cauldrons too. You know, they're good things to brew the soup in. It used to be in the old days when you had these high days, that people would come from all over to the meeting place, and they'd bring their chickens or rabbits that they caught or whatever, and throw it into the cauldron, and that was, you know, kind of stone soup for the gang, because you'd have a big bunch of folks and you needed food.
You brought a staff in this afternoon. What did you call that?
Well, actually, that particular staff is a druid staff. But in the photograph I showed you, I'm holding another staff that has like a deer skull on top of it. That's called a stang. And that, in my tradition, is an indication of my office within the coven circle, that I am a coven elder. And it can be like a forked stick or this. This particular stang was from an oak tree that had been hit by lightning. And then I carefully, according to magical prescriptions at the right quarters of the day, did all the processes to make it be magically charged. And then the skull came from a friend, and another member of the coven helped me get it all together, and it's been carefully consecrated. And this makes it a magical tool rather than just a stick with a deer skull on it. It's the energy that you put into something, the focus of that attention.
We're talking with Willow. She's a Lake County resident, and she's a priestess of the Wiccan religion. Am I getting even close now?
Yeah, there you go.
Would you like to introduce the rest of the people and what their positions are that you have?
Certainly. Here? This is Lawrence. He's my priest. We do have priests and priestesses. As I say, you can be either gender if you're a witch.
I don't know. I've been doing this for a few years. And I really like what Willow said. One thing I want to say was, many, many years ago, the Christians and the pagans weren't at odds. There was a case in Ireland, where my ancestors came from, where the Josephine priests, the first priests that founded colonies in that area, understood the life force and understood the nature force, and they shared many symbols with the druids. And it wasn't until Patricius of Rome came in, and we celebrate St. Patrick's Day, a lot of people do, but what they don't realize they're celebrating is a mass genocide of both druids and Christians in that isle. What Patricius of Rome did was come in and force the Church of Ireland to follow in the Roman Catholic vein. And he did this by force of arms.
Right. Well, that was the Roman way.
Yeah.
To continue with the introductions, this is Maka. She's our coven maid quite often. And she also is a priestess.
Well, as the maid, it's my job to set up the altar to keep the appropriate incenses burning at the appropriate time and to watch that the priestess doesn't...
set a robe on fire?
Yeah, that would be one thing. To basically watch and keep the equipment coming in its proper place and the cues going and hold the books and so forth for the people who are acting in the circle as the representatives of the god and the goddess, and in other words, the priest and the priestess.
And Kindor often carries the Wayland staff. The Wayland is kind of the peacekeeper and the intermediary between the world within the circle and the world without. If somebody comes to the door, he's got to answer the door. And if the, you know, cops roll into the park and want to know what you're doing out there in the middle of the night with candles and robes, then he goes and tells them. You want to tell the folks anything, Kinder?
Well, yeah, but we ain't got that much time.
Okay.
Let me, during that last few moments, or last 5 or 10 minutes, in passing, you talked about secrecy, and... why is there necessity to keep things secret? Or is that a... I'll just leave it at that.
A number of reasons. We don't usually have the problem of people shooting out our windows or crosses burned on our lawns and things like that as we have been known to have in the past. However, it can be a real interruption if you're in the middle of some nifty chant and some cop comes floundering through the poison oak with a flashlight wanting to know what you're doing because the neighbors called about weird noises. And... so you try to go to a place where you're far away from, you know, neighbors that are going to be bothered or this, that, or the other thing. And, of course, there is all this bad PR out there. I mean, I kid you not, I have known of, you know, windows shot out and, you know, things strewn on lawns and you know, all that kind of stuff in good old liberal old California. And so there's those reasons. There's also the reason that if you're working yourself up into the proper magical state, you need to not be interrupted by anything outside of what you're doing. It's kind of like if you're at plateau stage making love, you don't want the kids to come in and start bouncing around on the bed. Okay. It's the whole notion that you need to keep your focus. Also, if you're working on mental energy, if you're busy putting it out that such and such is going to happen, and somebody over here is saying, oh, it's not either, oh, you're just all full of ragweed, you don't know what you're talking about, then they're putting out this counter energy. I think that we're all acquainted with the whole notion of the power of persuasion, or, you know, television and Madison Avenue wouldn't be doing what they're doing to us all. So if you're working magic, you've got to be able to do this to your deep mind, convince it that what you're doing is really going to happen. And so you can't afford to have somebody there giving you all this feedback that you can't possibly make it work. As it happens, they're starting to be able to measure that what we've been talking about all these centuries really is back-upable with, you know, provable things. They've done control groups, go, gee, well, look at here. You get some patients in here, and you treat them all just the same, but you have this crowd over here that's got a group out here praying for them and doing magic for them and all this stuff, and they get better faster, wow. You know, and then they're finally being able to measure it. So it's starting to be real even to, like, Western medicine.
Now, you're talking about the spells and the magic part now?
Yeah.
Give me an example of or why you would want to cast a spell, or what it does, or what purpose it would have, or if you can reveal that at all.
Most of the spells that we are asked by other people to do for them have to do with finding jobs, finding girlfriends and boyfriends, overcoming health problems, physical problems and so forth. Quite often it's for divination. The people come for card readings. There was a time when I was living in a big city and there were a lot of big-time businessmen that would come over and get their cards read as long as I kept it secret and didn't let our friends know that that's what they were doing. And I've had a lot of people come to me, you know, I've got this little kid, you've got to give me some herbal teas that will help you with this. You know, this whole idea. Midwifery clients, blacksmithing, we're still doing the kinds of things we always did because we're still connected to that kind of thing. What we do for ourselves, usually we have our meetings and figure out, okay, this is the aspects we have at this moon. It would be a good time to work on these kinds of issues. And so maybe we need to do works for this, that, and the other thing. We have a period of time before each working meeting when we say, okay, what do we need to do tonight? And then we all agree on the works that we will do. Quite often it is four members of the group to provide, you know, clarity for a project they're working on, or it's a way of, like, applying... think of prayer as like talking and hoping the deity will listen, and meditation is like being quiet and hoping the deity will speak, and prayer is entreating the deity to do something. In our charge of the goddess, she says that she gives certainty, not faith, while in life. And part of that is that if you have a spell that you got from somebody that says, okay, I did this 99 times and it worked this way, it's like getting a chemistry experiment. You know, metaphysics and physics have laws that they follow. And so if you know that this spell has worked according to this many people, then you try it, then you can be pretty certain it's going to work. And sure enough, hey, bingo, it works again. Then you keep your little magical journal and you find out when it works best and this kind of thing. As I say, it's not just willy-nilly, it's a science.
That was actually my next question. Are there written records, or is this stuff handed down orally, or how does that work?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Many of the things that happened, as I say, a lot of the active persecution and suppression of the craft began when they had movable type in the printing press and could pass around this Malleus Maleficarum, you know, how to go get them. And a whole lot of the common people in those days couldn't read or write. All they had was oral tradition. And the teaching was handed down in things like knotted cords and special symbols and just, you know, I remember a witch's story about, well, my aunt taught me astrology by making charts in pie tops and this kind of things. You know, when you're venting the pie, you could just make it into an astrological chart, this kind of thing. And with embroidery and those kinds of womanly arts, what men did with the magic in their blacksmith shops and things, I cannot speak to. But I know that that's traditionally been the centering place for men's magic. And all these things were handed down. They did begin to be written down when people could do that. And in this century, beginning with Gerald Gardner and some of the others, there have been a number of books written about it and a number of even training manual kinds of things, and more all the time, so that a reasonably literate person could find a good bookstore and learn a great deal about it. And if they were sufficiently conscientious to actually go through the training exercises and keep their magical journals, they could become a properly trained person. They could even do their own self-initiation and go on that way. I personally went through ritual initiations of each advancement with my mother coven, and others have done initiations and other kinds of things. I'm also, as I mentioned, the staff is a druid. I'm also a member of the druid organization, because there again it's just a connection with the sacred groves and trees, but that's another part of the earth. I'm also a part of a ceremonial magical order, which is a whole different system of magic that's based on like the Kabbalistic kinds of things, and that's a very different system that's very intellectual, very precise, and it's kind of a juggling act, but I'm good at compartmentalization and keeping track of which kind of magic I'm working at which time.
Could someone also be a Christian and do all the things, you know, be in all the groups that you take part in?
Well, certainly.
Well, like I was saying, there was a time period where many of the mysteries and understandings that the early Christian church had were shared by the pagan people. The representation, and you see it in the Arthurian legends, of the Grail is another form of the Great Cauldron, the cauldron being, in a lot of mythos, the source of life. And those mysteries were understood by early Christians and pagans. They weren't exclusive from each other.
There are currently a number of people that are Christo-pagans and Judeo-pagans and Buddhist-pagans and a whole bunch of things like that, because part of our belief system says that each person has to walk their own spiritual path and find their own course, so we don't proselytize, we don't get up there and say, this is the only one true way. It's everybody finds their own. A lot of people are perfectly comfortable with reverencing Lord Jesus and reverencing, you know, these other gods. They don't see it as being exclusive. I personally subscribe to the notion that the divine force is understandable in many ways, that all gods are one god, all goddesses are one goddess, that essentially they're aspects of this divine force. And I don't see it as being a conflicting thing. A lot of people don't.
Okay, we're running close to the end here, so let me get these last couple of questions in that you put down, which might be of interest to the audience, which are about good and bad witches, and you've mentioned reincarnation already, ghosts, good and bad witches, and things like that.
I did touch a little bit, I think, on what I would call the bad witches, and that is the misguided ones, because, of course, my sense of evil is force misused. Hey, the sun and the atom bomb are the same kind of energy. One is life-giving and one is death-dealing. And so with magic, as I say, the laws of metaphysics follow laws just like the laws of physics, and you can use magic one way or another. If a person is actually initiated into the religion of Wicca, they could not very likely do anything evil, because they do take oaths that say their weapon should turn against them if they should hurt anything. One of the major tenets of the craft of the wise is harm none. Do what you will and harm none. And so you really have to think about any act that you do, any magic that you do, so that it doesn't do harm. Okay, meanwhile, you got folks like Anton LaVey and these people out here. He's like a guy that's been doing marketing Satanism, sort of like a carny show in San Francisco for a few decades, and he's this big-time Satanist wahoo. And there are a lot of those guys out there that think that, you know, it's all done with mirrors and smoke and let's have a good time. Okay. There are some magicians who do say, evil be thou my good, and try to worship actively evil and do evil things, and put a lot of energy into doing that. I personally don't think of them as priests and priestesses of the gods and goddesses, because my priestess says that you must harm none. My goddess says you can protect anything, but you can't harm. So, these guys out there, I don't consider them witches per se, but as I say, I have known of my own experience a number of folks that got into the Hollywood stereotypes and bought the mythos and put it on like a persona and went out there and said, oh yes, I'm a witch and I eat babies every chance I get and this kind of thing. And a lot of them are a little wacko and delusional, and this is, you know, a way of identifying with society's rebels and things, and they get off on it. And certainly they can get into doing a lot of evil. That, however, is not
my religion,
no.
And how about ghosts?
Ghosts, well, what people usually refer to as ghosts are what I would call an astral shell. I believe that we are made up of atoms of different kinds, that we have like these physical things that make our physical bodies, and then we have etheric atoms that make the energy body that's next out, and then we have Akashic atoms and these things. Okay, so you go around doing stuff you do in your life, and all of these things go with you. Your auric field and the whole bit goes with you. Okay, you croak, you die. You leave behind your physical shell. Sometimes some people's astral shells keep going. I remember reading about a couple that had lived forever in this house, and she was always leaving lights on, and he came behind and turned her lights off. And so after they had died, the lights went on and off as their astral shells kept going through this thing that they had been doing so long in life. A lot of times what people are seeing when they're seeing ghosts is this kind of residue of astral energy that's been left behind by, it's where habits are formed. And a lot of the energy of habits will reside in those shells. And so when we go on and rise above and beyond the physical and the astral and the binding to those habits, whether it's you know, tobacco or coffee or television or whatever it is.
Turning off lights.
Turning off lights. That stays with the astral shell, and the refined spirit moves on up toward perfection and growing and so forth. So that's what I would say most ghosts are.
Okay. Are outsiders, non-members, what is a coven, by the way, before I ask this question?
It's a working circle of initiates, and quite often there's like trainers that are part of what we call the outer circle or outer court that are in training that maybe are dedicated students and have gone through certain amounts of trainings and learned certain things, and then they go through more and more training. It's all a matter of learning how to control your energies. So a coven is a group of people who work together for a period of time and build up a kind of group mind and group energy that they can all use. And it's a working group of... To do this kind of stuff, you have to be able to get along real well. You have to be like-minded. You can't work together psychically if you're at odds. So it takes a while to evolve a good working circle.
And would an outsider ever be invited to any kind of... ritual?
Yeah, there are open circles, as we call them, in particularly areas like in the Bay Area. There are huge celebrations at Halloween, particularly, where there are, you know, 300 or 400 people in these great big auditoriums dancing and celebrating and so forth that happen. Sometimes we have invited people we knew that were curious to come. Usually, you know, there are ways that you have to go, a process you have to go through. But as I say, the sabbats are often a gathering of different covens and different groups. And quite often, friends and companions come to those kinds of meetings because, as I say, it's not so much a working of magic as a celebration of the seasons. And that's a lot easier for most people to accept. It's not possible to do really good magic, usually, unless you are trained properly.
Is America now, from your experience, a good place? Is it a pretty good place to practice all this, or are there still problems?
I don't think America is out of the woods on any problems. certainly, there's more religious freedom than there was in the 1600s. There our forces still hard at work trying to suppress that trend and turn back the clock. One friend of mine points out that with the current overpopulation of the globe, essentially anybody who ever lived on Earth is here again. Here we all are. Not only is it all those witches that died so horrendously during those centuries, or even just naturally, we're all back, and so is the Inquisition. And so when I see some foaming-at-the-mouth fanatic that wants to fry us all, I figure this is just some reincarnated Jesuit that's still running amok and just doesn't have the backup that they once did. And I think that's where you get a lot of the people that want to go, like I say, burning abortion clinics or clear-cutting forests or whatever it is they're doing to destroy life. I think that that's part of it, and we're still here to resist that destruction. As I say, it's easier now, even within my own lifetime, it's gotten easier. Most of the time now, I remember one time we were planning a rally in Sacramento, and there were maybe 40 folks in this room that had been working on this project for a long time, and then one of the people said something about, oh, I have an intro for our witch speaker, and the whole room went, we're it, oh my God, are we having a witch, and the speaker, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I don't think that would happen these days. I was at a rally up in Humboldt County over the trees, and I got up and identified myself as the priestess of the old religion, and hey, somebody else came up and sang a song about witches. You know, and it's kind of like that's one of the changes, that I don't get that, you know, effect of don't touch me and, you know, get back from my kids and, you know, I mean, people ask me to do childcare and stuff like that, you know.
Willow.
The fundies are still reactionary.
Oh, they always are. No matter what they're fundamental about or what religion, they're always reactionary. That's all they do.
Right.
Willow, I'd like to thank you for coming in and the other members of your coven for coming in and speaking with us.
Certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And a glad so unto you and all yours.
Thank you.